Krissa Hendricks here with a cold open. I just wanted to let you know that this was recorded a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I think, before we knew how bad everything was. Since then, I've been in complete self-isolation for 15 days. I want you guys to know we're all taking this very seriously, and I hope that you're taking it seriously as well. Hope you're home. Hope you're safe. Enjoy the episode.
Hi.
Thank you for coming and doing this with me, considering I'm at your house, so you didn't have to go anywhere.
It's super convenient for you.
It's real convenient for you to do this with me. I've actually wanted to have Bizarro on the podcast for a long time, both Kayla and I have, because...
And yet, it took forever.
It took forever. It did take forever. The podcast has been around 2 years. We have 50 episodes. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the 51st episode, I think.
Right.
I'm always scared to say that kind of stuff, because then things get put out of order, and then... So then I'm like, this will be the 54th episode, unless apocalypse. Speaking of apocalypse, Biz, we're in the middle of one.
Yes, there is a sickness and a disease across this nation. It's bad magic. I mean, no, it's coronavirus.
And we'll be talking about both today. So Bizarro is one of my favorite magicians. He's a fantastic magic inventor as well as a builder. A lot of your favorite things you see from very well-known performers do were actually built by Bizarro in the house that we are currently in, and I feel like you're like everybody's secret weapon. That's always how I refer to you.
Not everybody's, but a lot of people. Especially the Vegas guys, a lot of the West Coast people, but there's still people in the world who don't know who I am, so.
I always talk about you like you're just like a common household magic name, and when people don't know who you are, I always kind of think like, oh, that person's not very serious about their magic. I just
met David Stone for the first time, and he was only slightly familiar with my work through like my Color Changing SpongeBob, and that was it. But that's weird about magic is now you know who people are through their products and not their act when it was the other way around when I was younger.
So true. Yeah, Color Changing SpongeBob, people probably know you from Ninja Cookie and Double Stuffed.
Overstuffed is probably Overstuffed. The one that a lot of people know me for. The Kung Fu nobody cares about. Also non-toxic probably.
Non-toxic,
The one that other people know me for. So.
Yeah. So if you don't know Biz, you probably know his stuff. You probably have his stuff. I've seen Overstuff performed on The Illusionist and on television.
Every social media magician ever, apparently.
Yes. You ever seen an Oreo all of a sudden have lots of frosting in the middle? Biz created that, and everybody buys it and puts it on Instagram.
And I have a cookie trick coming out in the future that will also probably plague social media very soon.
And what do you have to say for yourself?
Nothing. Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
So I really wanted to have you on right now, partially because it's very convenient because I'm staying at your house.
Yes.
Because all of the gigs are canceled.
All
the gigs are canceled. But also because you're one of the most creative magicians I know, creative people generally I know. I mean, you build escape rooms and you're a problem solver. And a lot of the time when I get stuck on something, you're the first person I call. And then you're also the sixth person I call when I have like five more ideas from other people. And I thought today what we could do is we could talk about creativity so that this time people have trapped in their houses in self-isolation, performers have not doing shows, we could give them some help supercharging their creativity so that they could use this time well. Because, you know, Shakespeare wrote King Lear in quarantine.
Sure. So that's a good story. I'm sure it's totally true.
Well, it's a great story, yes. And we're going to pretend it's true because
we weren't there and we don't know.
Because we weren't there and we don't know, but that's what people think.
Yes.
And I think we definitely look forward to having some kind of silver lining. So we're going to carve one out of things we found in your garage.
Cool. Nice. So there's lots of crap in my garage to do that with.
Oh my goodness. You have everything. Okay. So one of the first things I wanted to talk about is when I work with people and we talk about creativity, I always find the first thing people come up against is all of the roadblocks. You know, well, I'm just not a funny person, or I don't know how to do stuff, or I don't know how to make solutions. You know, I think people jump to this idea that their ideas are undoable, or they don't know how to break them down into smaller tasks, or they don't know how to get the knowledge or access to the information they need
or
to do
what they need to
do, or they're overwhelmed. Yeah. So let's start from there. Let's start from like, what do you find are the biggest roadblocks people have for creating new, original, creative magic?
Usually themselves. I mean, it's really what it is. It's like they're either lazy or they've talked themselves out of it. I mean, that's the biggest roadblock right there. Somebody going, oh, I could never do that. Or, oh, I don't want to do that.
That sounds hard.
Yeah, kind of. And I mean, obviously there's, I don't have time, which is a valid reason, but.
Until right now.
Right, until right now.
You have lots of time.
I mean, I've been talking about creativity forever. And especially in my touring lecture, because I have a whole creativity section in there. And one of the big things I talk about is learning about the world around you. And it's like the more things you know, the more creative avenues you have to go down. And with the internet, anything you want to learn is at your fingertips, literally. And like, let's say, oh, I want to make a rubber banana, right? You can learn how to mold a banana and then make a latex rubber banana. It is perfectly within, and you're going to screw up a couple times, but you know what? That's the point. You learn more from your mistakes than your failures, and you can tell the people who have failed a lot and the people who have not.
I'm always shocked when I run into people who are, you know, starting to build something for the first time. You know, they're designing their first magic trick that they're inventing from scratch, and they tell me, oh yeah, you know, I built it and it didn't work, and then I built it again and it didn't work, and I just thought, what am I doing? And all I can think is, okay, do you literally mean you did it twice? Because that's insane. You know how long it takes to figure something? The book production is on version 48 or it's version 46. And how many times, like, I don't think I've ever come up with anything that was exactly the way it was supposed to be in the first go.
It'll happen. Like, there are things that I know that I have come up with in my head and been like, oh, I think that'll work. Like Color Changing SpongeBob, talking about that again, that actually worked the exact way I thought it would when I came up with it.
You were in the shower, right?
I'm always in the shower when I think of these things. That's my, it's my zen zone, man. If I'm standing in the shower, my mind wanders, and then it comes back with these ideas, and I'm like, oh, I don't know where you keep going, but I'm glad you wander off to there. So yeah, I mean, those things I jump, and I talk about this in my lecture. I say, you know, I jumped out of the shower, I made a prototype and to test it, because when you have an idea, I think that's the other thing too. A lot of people put it off. They're just like, oh, I have this great idea. I'm going to put it in a notebook and never, ever, 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 ever make it. It's like when you have an idea, make it immediately, make a prototype, even if it's made of crap, you know, hot glue and a prayer, whatever it is, just make it now, make it now, now, now. So you can find out if it'll work, if it's viable, or what else it can do.
Yeah, I really believe in having, I mean, it's hard now because I'm traveling so much, but I really believe in having lots of rapid prototyping material just available, like paper and cardboard and hot glue and tape, and just, you don't need a lot. You can usually put something together with just a few things you have, like basically garbage.
Yeah, and they're not meant to last a long time, but they're at least give you an idea, because you can sit there and go, okay, that won't work, but...
Yeah. What did you learn from this? Where are you going?
Right. Here? Well, it's like I have an effect where I have a package of Oreos, because of course it is.
It's always Oreos.
It's one of the big packages, and it's empty, but when I shake it, it fills visually with cookies.
I remember when you were sending me videos of that in its early stages.
And I had that idea for 2 years, and I had all these different methods for it, and they were just bad, and I'm just messing with it. And then finally, I found a material that worked to do what I wanted, which was outside of the realm of magic. It was it was in the best magic store, the hardware store. And then I had the method to get it to do magic, air quotes. Took me a while, because it's one of those things like, okay, now I have the materials, but now how do I make it happen? And the first method I had was crap. And then I was like, wait a second. And the more you make stuff, the more you're going to sit there and you'll feel it when it's right. You sit there and go, no, 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 wait a second. This, yes, yes, Pinky, this is this is what it'll do. But honestly, the first part is just starting.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, just start. Because I've learned, because I do, you know, freelance video and graphic design and websites and all this side things, I have learned that halfway through, you're going to hate it. You're going to look at it and go, this just looks nothing like what I want. But what I've learned is you have to keep going to the end. You can't just give up halfway when it looks like half-assed. You have to ride it out, because then you'll start solving problems and you'll working out stuff. That's a big part of creativity, is just problem solving. And you have to learn what to compromise, where to compromise, and how to compromise stuff. But, you know, and it can be as simple as just getting some elastic and making a little flap gimmick, you know. But when you start getting into the more complicated stuff, like what I do with electronics and silicones and all that stuff, what it's really about is never giving up. Just keep doing it until you understand it and can do it.
Yeah.
That's really all it is.
That's part of what I really like about bullet journaling, because you were saying, you know, you got to get it out of your head as quickly as possible and just build it.
Yeah.
And part of what I love about bullet journaling over the way I used to keep notebooks is that it's very active. Mm. You know, you're always moving ideas forward and you're always kind of reviewing the journal. And so I always think about a bullet journal as like a churning vortex of like thoughts. They don't have to sit in my head. They can sit in the journal, but they're still active in the way that things are in my head.
Right.
And I love going through old journals and being able to go page by page and go, oh yeah, I built that and I built that and I eventually built that, because I think a bullet journal is just more active. But I agree that you have to build it and then you also have to get it to the end. And I think part, for me at least, you know, your thing is you come up with it in the shower. Mine is always when I'm laying in bed trying to sleep.
I get that too. Right as I'm falling asleep, right as I'm waking up. I actually had a trick I thought of the other day as I was waking up, half asleep. I wrote it down and I just need, I'll make it at some point. You know, it's like, that's another place, another little zen zone. And sometimes people, sometimes they have it while driving. A lot of people say it's on the toilet. That one's not for me.
I'm not on the toilet long enough. But the thing is, I have too much fiber in my diet. Right, so right. It's fine.
So, yeah, so that's the most regular thing about you.
Why am I insulted by that?
I don't know. You started it.
I did.
But yes, one of the things that helps me is while I am terrible at math, I'm really good at visualizing the physics of something. Mm. Like, I know that if I hook something up in this certain way, it'll move like this at this speed, at this angle. So being able to visualize, like, I will spend a month building a prop in my head before I ever commit to, and that's not always, it just depends what it is. If it's something I'm not in a hurry to build, but it's something I'm not completely 100% how to make it, I just build it in my head, and I also will sketch it out. Like, I've been keeping composition books since I was in high school. So I have these composition books that have sketches and stuff in them, especially when I'm building escape rooms and escape room props. I sketch out with what I want it to look like, and like if I'll sketch out a room and where the props are going to go, stuff like that, to visualize. So if you can't visualize in your head and you can visualize, even if this is the thing, I know people are like, I'm a terrible artist, I can't draw. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you went to art school. Hmm. Just sketch something. Just draw it out. You can get an idea visualizing like that as well. I have Murphy's lecture I did that was on prop building and creativity. And after it released, a couple people emailed me and said, I just saw your lecture and I built a thing today. And I was like, good, I'm glad to hear it. Like, some people actually just went out and said, you know, YOLO, let's, you know, build something. And so the longest answer to your original question was just do it.
Yeah.
Just start.
I think that's the hardest part.
Don't talk yourself out of it.
I think also you have to give up on, you and I have talked about this. That's why I'm bringing it up, because you and I have had this conversation four separate times about this idea that perfect is this huge enemy.
Unattainable goal.
Yeah. So you have to just build stuff and let it be ugly. So yeah, it's not just start, but it's also like start and don't have much in the way of expectations.
Well, I will tell you, one of my secrets is as long as it looks good from the front so the audience can see it, it can look like hell from the back. Some of my stuff is just atrocious if you saw it from behind, but who cares? I'm the only one who's going to see it. The audience will never, hopefully never see it. And I think the biggest thing is also there's a lot of people out there who lack confidence or they don't have an abundance of patience. Because making stuff, it can be a very patience draining process where you're just like, it's not working, I give up.
Yeah.
And if that's happening for me, walk away. Walk, if you're getting angry, walk away, come back to it and rinse and repeat until you are not angry at it.
Yeah. And then I think one of the other things that you've talked about on different places already, like your Murphy's lecture and stuff like that, is using online videos and online resources.
Yeah. Prop porn, as I call it.
Yeah, and there's some YouTube channels that basically they just kind of go through it. You can just kind of lean back and enjoy it because they're like, here's how to make this and here's how to make this. And you can kind of just watch somebody build different things and let it wash over you. And I find that that for me is really valuable because I just find that my brain is like passively absorbing these techniques.
Knowledge through osmosis.
Exactly. Like, oh, that's how that works. Oh, that's how you
do. Oh, I love watching videos on how things work. Like, I'm not a big fan of fiction, but I love nonfiction. I like reading and watching videos on how things are done and made.
Adam Savage's YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah. One Day Builds, yeah.
One Day Builds is so great. I can't tell you how many times I've just watched like an hour kind of in the background while I'm doing something else of him just making stuff, because it's just so satisfying to watch him problem solve. And, you know, I wonder sometimes if I'm just absorbing some of that mental problem solving.
Well, there's all sorts of websites out there for stuff like that. Like, even if it's not something you're doing, like, let's say you are trying to build a magic prop, but There is a website called Punished Props that does a lot of movie and TV show and video game prop recreation. There's a website called the RPF, and it's basically a cosplay forum, right?
Oh.
And here's the thing. There's a ton of people on there, including professionals in the Hollywood movie business who just make things for fun. And I, of course, I see that and go, where do you find the time? you bastards. But these are people who love it so much, they do it on their days off. You know, but these guys are like Hollywood special effects, and some of them are just hobbyists. But so like one of my secret tricks is when I'm looking up something, I type like dyeing plastic RPF, and somebody on that forum will know how to dye plastic, and you can find somebody talking about it or a video on it. Wow. But all these cosplay and like movie replica channels, again, like Adam Savage, One Day Build, Punished Props, and Tested, and all this stuff.
Oh, Tested, yeah.
You can, there's some amazing amounts of information on there for simple stuff, but it's like, let's say you have a doctor's bag, you buy a brand new doctor's bag, and you want that to be your magic bag, and but you want it to look old. Mm. So you look up weathering leather. And you'll find videos of all sorts of people telling you how to do it many different ways. And you shouldn't just sit there and stop on one video. You should be able to watch one and go, okay, are there other techniques that... Because sometimes I'll watch something and go, that seems awfully complicated. I bet you there's a better way. And there usually is.
Yeah, it's like, oh, just use shoe polish. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like, you know, you can stain wood with one stain, or you can use leather dye, which works way better and faster.
Yeah, lots of different ways to get around the same problem and having different ideas of how to do that, especially for magic when the applications are so unusual. I used to walk into hardware stores with a project in mind and be looking for something and think, okay, I'm going to ask really specific questions and then this person will be able to help me. Hi, I need to make something a perfect circle and you should try to explain it. And now I've learned to just walk into like hardware stores and go, hi, I'm a magician.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to be using things for their intended purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Because for so long, I would just watch people at hardware stores look at me going, she's going to mess up her plumbing. I'm not plumbing anything. I'm building a prop. Let's start from there. So I often find people in those, you know, shops like that are very helpful, but you kind of need to tell them what you're doing so that they can help you properly. Yeah.
So any other questions you have in your little black book
there? Yes, I do. I have many questions. One of the things I love about creating new magic is that you get this wonderful sense of ownership over things where you go, you know, okay, I genuinely contributed to the overall wealth of knowledge in the world of magic rather than just spitting out the same classics over and over again and maybe add like a tiny twist on it. You actually get to present something that could not be done before you came up with a method for it.
Or it only fits your performing style. Like, yeah. Nobody else could do it because it would be weird.
Exactly. But I think also what ends up happening is that when you start creating your own magic, you stop starting your creative process from what is already out there. Because when you don't know how to make things, your only option is to go, okay, well, what can I do with linking rings? But if you felt or you had the confidence to think that you could actually build and design stuff yourself, then you might start from, hey, I've always been really interested in Oreos. What if I made 47 tricks around the idea of different things you could do and possibly with Oreos?
Mm-hmm.
And then I marketed. That was my whole brand. That would be cool.
Well, it's like I always say you should make the magic to who you are and don't make yourself to the magic. Because that's how you end up with all these clones who's just like, I'm going to do it the way the instructions say to do it. So am I. So am I. So am I. Infinity, infinity. And so, like, you find something you're good at or something that stands out about you or something you like. I have a friend who loves ketchup, like, to an unhealthy amount. And I'm like, why do you not do magic with ketchup? And he's like, why don't I? You know, and it's like, tell people about it. Like, people want to hear about these things, and that interests people, and it's a hook. If you people, this is all from my creative, by the way, I'm going to say this. If anybody who's listening wants to, wants access to my creativity notes, message me or, you know, and sorry, I was going to say or you, but that wouldn't do any good.
So. No, yeah. We'll put Bizarro's contact information on the website or in the description for this podcast.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then we'll just put the description and the link to the creativity notes in the description.
Great, let's do that.
Yeah, so if anybody wants the notes, I will give them to you. You can download them from a link. And if for some reason that link doesn't exist when you hear this, just email me.
Yeah,
and we'll I will be happy to send you that. Because in there, I talk about a lot of things you're hearing, and one of them is if you give the audience a little bit of truth, they believe a great big lie. And that is giving them a hook, something they understand, something they're familiar with, and then they'll just go on the journey with you.
Yeah.
And so it's like having that item or object or idea that just made, and that's, you know, why all a lot of my magic and props are everyday objects, because people are familiar with the objects they're familiar with.
Yeah. And I think that there's something really valuable about seeing something on stage that feels so common and so, okay, forgettable almost. And then when it does something unusual, it's even more spectacular, rather than somebody putting a box on stage that's all painted in primary colors with stars on it that you've never seen in a million
Chinese
years.
Writing.
Yeah, I find whenever I come over to a business house, I'm like, oh, is that a toaster or is it a magic trick? I often have to second guess all the objects in your house because I know you well enough to go, I don't know if that's actually a toaster.
Liz, I once made a thing with, I took two paper plates and put a magnet between them and glued them together so I could make it look like I switched one item for another. Mm. I just left it sitting out. And it got thrown away by Liz because it looks like an ordinary item. Yeah. Why would she not think it was? And so now she comes up to me and goes, can I throw this away? Can I throw this away? Can I throw this away? I'm like, yes. I've learned to not put stuff that looks like trash in the kitchen.
So I really want to encourage people to use this time that you're in self-isolation or social isolation or whatever to try to create some new magic. Because how amazing would it be if at the end of this, if it ever ends, it will end. When it ends, eventually, if the whole magic world had this different vibe, because instead of everybody working their butt off, you now have this downtime to be creative.
Uh-huh.
And it'd be cool if everybody used that time instead of like just playing video games. There's nothing wrong with video games. But if you just took an hour a day, which is, that's always kind of my understanding, at least for me. I don't know how you work, Biz. But for me, I kind of have to give myself like a rule like that. Like, I'm going to spend an hour.
I don't work well with structure.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, then we'll each give them kind of our idea of how to force yourself to be creative.
Well, you can't force creativity, first off.
You can. I absolutely think you can. I disagree.
I mean, you can sit down and write and stuff like that, but you can't force yourself to just come up with great ideas. You can force yourself to come up with ideas.
Okay. So I think that if you don't have a lot of practice coming up with ideas, if you're the kind of person that has been doing the same show for a long time or just hasn't stretched those muscles, I think the creative muscles and the ability for your brain to come up with new, novel concepts, that's something that needs to be worked out and stretched out. So if you haven't done it, I think there's a lot of value in sitting
down.
Well,
that's different. You're talking about creativity exercises at that point.
Totally.
And so
I think it's a way to force yourself to be creative.
Well, yes. But it's one of the, what I'm talking about is just, you know, sitting there and visualizing ideas and stuff like that. Okay, so let me give you an example. So like a good creativity exercise is going, let's say you go to the dollar store, mm-hmm. right? And you buy a bunch of random crap that has nothing to do with magic. And then you can bring it home and make magic out of it. That is a creativity exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett Thomas has something in one of some of his creativity notes where he talks about take the beginning of one trick and the ending of another, smash them together, see what happens.
Ooh, that's cool.
I know Chris Kenner has talked about that. He writes down an idea a day or more in a notebook with. And here's the secret. Don't worry about method.
Mm-hmm.
It's effect first. That's the same way we write escape rooms. The effect comes first. Then worry about the method later. Now, sometimes you discover a cool method and go, what can I do with this?
Yeah.
That's a separate thing. But usually it's just come up with the visual first and the idea, the trick, without any bias or any limitation of what you would do. Because that's what bogs people down. Like, I don't know how to – like, I have this idea, but I have no method or no idea. And that, sometimes that's people who are newer to magic. And sometimes that's people who just don't have as much of an education in magic or don't know a lot of things that are outside of the magic box, mm-hmm. as I call it. So, yeah, so those are definitely exercises to get you thinking in a creative manner. But you can sit down and try to think of a dozen methods once you need method, but there's nothing that can force you to come up with the right one at the right time. Sometimes it'll just hit you when it hits you.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I don't think that means that you can't force yourself to be creative. I think you can't force yourself to come up with the perfect idea. That's going to come when it feels like. But coming up with lots of different ideas.
I think we're talking about two different things with the same word.
Maybe. Could be.
Regardless.
What do you guys think? Tell us in the comments. Right. Are we disagreeing about nothing because we have corona?
But here's the thing, too. There is no formula for creativity. I can't hand you a pamphlet, a book. There's nothing I can give you that is how you should be creative. Everybody will approach it differently.
Yes. Yes. So, but I think that there are...
But again, there are exercises.
There are exercises. I think there's a lot of value in giving yourself some sort of initial structured system or some safe space or some exercise to start creativity. I'm saying this because I used to work with a lot of people, and I still kind of do, who have never had to do anything like this. They've never built anything. Mm-hmm. They've never had to write a script or anything, right? And working with people like that, I have learned that it's very hard for them to know where to start.
Right.
And so having something as simple as, this is what you're going to do. You're going to take a rubber band and a paper clip and a piece of cardboard, and you have a pair of scissors, and make magic out of it. You know, I like the idea of just...
I'm listening. Go on.
Okay.
I'm just... I'm observing something while you're talking. Go ahead. I'm listening.
What are you observing?
Don't worry.
It's distracting for me, so it's hard for me to talk in.
So for those of you listening at home, I actually have a laser pointer, and she's easily distracted with this laser pointer.
I'm a cat.
Which is very entertaining to me.
There's a laser pointer running around. Like, as soon as you brought out the laser pointer, I immediately forgot what I was saying.
I have this blue laser pointer I got for free with my glasses, don't ask. And I just noticed that it actually reacts differently to different materials. Like, it's really bright on this paper, but on this paper, it's not. It's very dim on this paper, and on that, it's barely visible at all. But
that's because the black is absorbing a lot of the light.
But I know, but that's what I find interesting. It's like, why is this white different than that white? Like, and then, yeah.
Those are different kinds of paper, too.
Right. So that's why I'm just like, what is happening? But I was listening to you, like, that's white, but that's not giving me the same. Yeah. So I'm fascinated by this laser pointer and why it's different. And I'm listening to, because this is the way my brain works. This is, I do stuff like this, and this probably needs to get edited out. It may not. I don't know.
Good luck, Chris, turning this section into a thing. Coronavirus ramblings. Biz and I might have coronavirus because
you would have given it to me.
Maybe I gave it to you, but also we were joking about how we've not been the most careful because
we're responsible adults.
Yeah. Biz and I went and played go-karts at an abandoned family fun center. And went to a show. In our defense, though, there were only 6 people in the audience at that show. So, and none of them sat anywhere near each other. Being in Vegas during the coming apocalypse is really fun because Vegas is already kind of apocalypse-y.
Yeah.
So it just feels like I'm in a movie. Everything's
but
very
also
surreal.
Hanging out with me is awesome because I get to go do fun things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Did I not compliment you enough?
No. I'm talking about the go-karts and the laser tag.
The go-karts and the laser tag and the VR and the donuts. This is the way to do the apocalypse. I have had some serious apocalypse fun, you guys. It's been really great. And also, you and I have done a lot of, like, coming up with ideas, too, mm-hmm. I feel. Or just trading ideas.
Well, we've been talking about, you have some ideas that we were fleshing out.
Yeah.
And what's funny is, we did not intentionally sit down to do that. We just were sitting in a bar with another magician talking about it. And you were describing it to her, and then we were just interjecting random ideas. And actually, one thing I find, this is a very interesting thing that I find when you have an idea. So this is something that I do all the time. I will have an idea for something. It may not be 100% fleshed out, right? I'll have a vague idea, an outline in my head, and I'll describe it to people. They'll be like, what are you working on? And I go, oh, this thing. And I start just, you know, word vomiting at them about the idea and the concept. And then as I'm describing it to them, I'm actually working out problems. I will say things that I have never said before.
I do that all the time.
Things that I never intended to say. And then all of a sudden, my mouth and my brain have this conspiracy of just like, hey, did he know that he knew this? Apparently not. We're going to tell this person. And I'll just work out the thing in description of saying it out loud to people. And I think that helps too, is just having a sounding board to just do and say stuff and go, oh, and then I'm going to do this and it'll work.
Yeah. I wonder sometimes if like talking about an idea is a sort of a weird way of putting it in actual space. Mm-hmm. Like it gives it 3 dimensions. It's almost like talking about it with people and trying to describe it in words is like verbal 3D printing.
Right. Well, also, you've seen me, like, when I describe an idea, you'll see me get up out of my chair and act it out.
Yeah.
And,
it's hilarious.
And then all of a sudden go, wait, hold on. Whoa, what about this? What about this? And I just do it.
Yeah. But one of the things I've also noticed about the last few days, because I'm not supposed to be in Vegas right now. I came out here to help.
No, clearly you are.
I came out here to help with a project for a couple of days to help Miranda Allen with one of her projects in Vegas. And then I was going to go fly out and do Magic Whirl and some gigs this weekend. And then everything got canceled. But I could not be more grateful to have gotten stuck quote unquote stuck in Vegas because it's been so lovely. And one of the things I've noticed, and this is something I've noticed in the last 2 years, is that if I give my brain time to have fun and have input, you know, so I'm doing things and I'm looking at things and I'm distracted or interested
outside
in things,
influences.
Yeah. Then ideas sort of
stimuli
take shape. Because if you're just working or building and you're not taking in new information, there's no sort of new edges to rub your idea up against. You know what I mean? Well, I'm thinking of it in terms of like an idea is like a rough thing and it needs sandpaper to wear it down.
Yes.
So like new ideas are the same. I'm being very
existential.
Yes. I'm inspiring people right now.
Oh, good.
This is so so inspirational. I'm a little overtired.
All the inspiration.
I can tell I'm a little overtired because as soon as you had the laser pointer, I was just like, laser pointer? I get it. I'm going to get it, that laser pointer. Where'd it go? How did it, what?
Okay.
I'm a cat.
Yeah, I got it. Thanks. Yeah.
The joke is I'm a cat.
Yeah, I know you are.
Reacting to laser pointers like, oh, cat. Yeah, I know what's happening right now.
I know what's happening too. We're doing a podcast.
Are we busy?
I mean, unless
this microphone's not even
unless
on.
Unless this is the most elaborate prank that's ever been pulled on me.
It's not a prank. It's the only way I can get you to talk to me, Biz.
That's not true. You know, if you get me talking about magic and creativity, I won't shut up.
That is true.
I have so many thoughts.
You have a lot of thoughts. That's part of what I love about hanging out with you is that I'll go, hey, I'm working on this, and then it'll get worked out, and then you go, I'm working on this. And it doesn't feel like work. It just feels like that's just kind of how your standard operating procedure is.
Yes.
So just chat about stuff. And you don't often run into people like that. Like, I feel like your whole brain is just always doing that. And then when it has to make dinner, it's like, ugh, okay, I guess I'll do this thing now. Stupid food.
Well, I had somebody once say something very interesting to me. They said, your brain must be very loud. Like, it's like constant noise. And I'm like, actually, no, I don't think it is. It's like, and if it is, I've just learned to live with it. And it's just normal for me. But it's like, yeah, it's like, I know people who just really cannot with themselves. And I'm just like, yeah, whatever, it's fine. It's just, maybe it's because my parents were hippies and my mom smoked a lot of pot when she was breastfeeding me. I don't know what happened.
That explains so much. Now I get it.
But we're talking about creativity for people.
Right. So I think here's what we should do. I think we should start from like every level of where somebody might be starting from and then provide really quick, just ideas to get people started. So level one is you've never had an original idea in your life.
Well, here's something.
Never had a thought.
Here's an exercise. This is what we're talking about with people being cooped up. This is one thing I do want to talk about real quick before I forget because I keep forgetting it. If you're stuck at home, look at some of your pre-existing routines and figure out, A, if they can be done differently, B, if you should still be doing them at all, or C, if there's a better method for the method you currently have to accomplish the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get stuck as performers doing something for so long, we never step back and look at it and go, why am I still doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Is this really the best way to do this? No, because the thing is that we just, as humans in general, you know, we just get so used to something that you just end up doing the same act forever. And even though it feels like it's perfect and it doesn't need any work, every performance is an opportunity to learn something. And you should look at it and be like, maybe it's time to like re-examine this.
Yeah, I always think about it in terms of cultural inflation. Have we talked about this before?
I don't recall.
So you invest in your show. Let's say you invest like $100 of creative energy. You know, this is a metaphor.
It's nice that you could quantify that with a dollar sign.
It's $100 of creative energy. That creative energy you're investing into your show is not going to have the same value in 2 years. Because basically culture moves forward and you've stayed put.
And magicians generally don't.
Exactly. And so because of this growth of culture and this evolution of culture, I think what'll happen is, you know, you write a routine and you're like, this is amazing. And it is amazing. You're correct. You're doing a great job. But in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, what culture is interested in and the way that they watch entertainment, the things they want to get from entertainment, the way they think about magic as special effects move on and things change, our relationship to magic, what we're interested in changes, the way we want to experience it changes. So I think, you know, that's a great idea to look through what you have and ask yourself, should I be doing this or could I do this in a different way? Because if you've convinced yourself that the material you were doing 10 years or 15 or 20 years ago is still perfect...
You're wrong.
You might not be wrong, but it's worth
asking. You're probably wrong.
It's worth asking the question. Okay, so.
So yes, let's go back to your thing.
Okay, so I love that. So step one, somebody has never had an original idea. Now, I don't actually believe there are people that have never had an original idea, but I believe there are people that have convinced themselves they're the kind of person that has never had an original idea.
Yes.
So for those people, what do we suggest to get them started?
Well, the thing I already talked about is just go buy random stuff and try to make magic out of it. Like, that's the easiest thing for step one, is just to see how easy it is to slam random things together to make magic, to force yourself to think creatively of like, okay, what's the justification for this with this with this?
I also tend to tell those people that you need to give yourself... like, limitations are really valuable.
Oh, restrictions are the best way to be creative. You basically say, I want to do this without this. I need to accomplish this without doing this slight. I need to get this done by this date.
Yeah, exactly. So giving yourself limitations and then also being a little bit disciplined about amount of time.
Yeah.
Because I see people come in and go, okay, I have to accomplish this thing I've set for myself, this challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And then they work on it for 3 minutes and go, I couldn't come up with anything. I think... you should give yourself a certain amount of time, more time than you're really comfortable sitting there and looking at it and working on it and trying, because you need a certain amount of time just to get the motor running. And some of that time is going to be uncomfortable. Like, you need to push through the part of it where you feel like you're never going to have any good ideas.
Right. And this is something we talked about the other day, actually. If you're going to sit down and write out ideas, generally the first like 5 to 10 or more idea, if they basically, some people will say if the idea comes to you easily, like immediately, like fast, it's the same one everybody else will have. That's not necessarily true, especially if you just have a weird way. If you're like Mario Lopez and you have a weird way of thinking of things, right?
Yeah.
So it's not always true. So it doesn't apply to everybody. You know, there's no, again, none of this is hard, fast rules for everybody. But it's like, usually if you're brainstorming ideas, the first ones are the ones everybody else will go to. So generally put those aside, write them down, but then be like, okay, let's get crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the things I find is look around the room that you're in. Like, if I remember I was working on something with Justin Flom for a commercial he was working on, and we came up with some ideas, and I said, all right, let's get nuts. And I was in my garage, and I looked and said, okay, I have a hammer. Let's say I take this hammer, and we hammer these candies into this other candy, and it disappears. You know, so it's like, I used to get ideas by just going and walking around stores, and you know, you can get the weirdest ideas just walking around and look at stuff and go, what can I do with that? What can I do with that? What can I do with that? Oh, hey, this thing, it looks like this. Like, it's a big one. It's like looking at an object, especially a magic trick, and going, what does this look like? And then turning it into that object.
Yeah, I think that's very prop-based. I think you can also take that same concept and apply it to plots, magic plots.
Right.
I mean, today, when you guys were working on the go-karts, I was thinking about how... I don't know if this idea is anything, but I'm happy to give it away. I was thinking about how there's an optimum amount of times you could drive around that track that would give people the most sense of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, one is too few because you've been waiting in line and it's a fairly short track.
But there is diminishing returns when you're going in a circle.
So, yeah, exactly. Yes. So, you know, what is the best amount of time to drive in that circle that it's still perceived as fun, but not that you got cheated out of some value? And then I was thinking about, there's totally a magic routine there about how do you figure out like the optimum amount of chips to eat and then maybe there's
should I do 6-card repeat before the audience hates me?
Well, exactly. Could you apply that concept?
The answer is none at all. Don't do the trick, period. Just don't.
Well, anyway.
There's a reason there's a thing called the rule of three.
Okay. So that's the first kind of person, a person that has convinced themselves. You guys are going to have to listen to this episode on halftime because Biz and I talk really fast. And when I hang out with Biz, I talk faster than I even normally talk because Biz talks and thinks fast. So I'm just going to apologize for how fast this episode is.
I won't.
I apologize for everything. It's my culture. Okay, so number one, people who have convinced themselves that they're not creative. Number two, I find, are the people who have so many ideas. They have no idea where to start. They are completely overwhelmed and they feel buried under a pile of concepts and ideas and no idea what to do. And basically they just give up and then they just do the show.
I don't know anybody like that. That wasn't sarcasm. I've never met anybody who has too many ideas to know where to start.
Oh, I know people
like that. I mean, I've been in situations where I was overwhelmed because I had like escape rooms where I'm like, I have so much stuff to do. I don't know where to start building. But I don't know if I have personally known anybody, which may be sad for me, that has had so many ideas. They're like, I don't know what to do.
I think there are lots of magicians who've spent a lot of time collecting ideas but haven't had any time to actually work on them. So I think...
Well, that easy thing is just pick one and go.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Pick one at random.
I mean, make a dartboard. Get a piece of foam board and some post-it notes. Write it down. Throw a dart. Go with that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Done.
Okay, next kind of person. The person has lots of really good ideas but doesn't know how to make anything or has never made anything.
Right, so that one's more difficult because that requires a whole separate set of skills is learning how to build stuff. Because learning how to build things is different. But again, sometimes just some hot glue and some poster board and some tape will get you enough to build a prototype to show somebody else who can build it. Like, especially, like, let's say you need something 3D printed and you don't have a 3D printer. Well, you're kind of screwed. But welcome to the world we live in where you can just have things 3D printed online and sent to you.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. There's a lot of places online where you can get things made or 3D printed or scanned or cut.
Or you can hire people who know how to do these things.
But in my experience... It is much easier to have other people make a finished version if you already have a prototype. I have personally made a prototype of at least a really crap prototype of every prop I've ever had anyone else build of any kind. Right down to, you know, sewing little models of dresses I want. Because it's much easier to communicate to people who work with physical objects in physical objects.
I've even made things that started as a prototype and lasted me years. Like,
oh, really?
The phrase I have for that is sometimes a temporary fix can become a permanent solution. But eventually that prototype will break down or you get sick of it or you figure out a better method for it. And then what you do is you make a better version. You make Salt Launcher 2.0, basically.
Ooh, okay. So. Or Flamethrower 2.0. Yeah. I remember that
actually,
one.
Actually, I don't like calling anything 2.0 because unless it's software, that's dumb.
Okay. All right.
Every time I see a magic product released online, it's like, this is 2.0. And I'm like, first off, that's not software. And when you say 2.0, it feels to me, it's like, we released this too early and didn't experiment enough with it. So now we're adding all the stuff that we should have put in there in the first place.
I mean, that's like the magic world in a nutshell. Right. Okay. So then another problem you might have is that you have a lot of half-finished things or half-conceived ideas that aren't completed, but you're the kind of person that is addicted to starting projects and are really terrible at finishing them.
For that, I'd say give yourself a deadline to have this one particular thing done. Pick one thing and go, I'm going to have this done by this point. Actually, for me, the best deadline is I want to do this in this next show I'm doing. I need to have it done by this date so I can rehearse it and put it in this show.
That's a great idea.
Like having a deadline to perform. Because if you just give yourself a deadline, you won't get it done because you can move that deadline. But if it's a gig, well, you that deadline cannot be moved unless it's coronavirus.
That is how the new bottle routine got finished, was that I insisted I do it as the middle act at the Magic Castle a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so it had to get finished.
That was my duct tape act when I added the multiplying duct tape rolls. I was performing with Jordan Wright down on the Peller at the castle. And I'm like, I want this done by then. So I got it done. I mean, I've also... There's a book by Paul Osborne called The Art of Rehearse, and he got a whole bunch of magicians together to write on how they rehearse. And I was one of them, which I was actually very honored to be part of that. And two of the magicians in there, myself and Adam Trent, have probably the worst best advice in there, because him and I have the same kind of idea where we're just like, you know, don't be afraid to come up with an idea and try it somewhere the next day. But you have to be confident in your performing ability and understand that if something goes wrong, you can pull it out of the fire. But that's not for everybody, obviously. But I have no fear because I believe getting that first bad performance out of the way teaches you more than any rehearsal will. Just doing it. Like we did a show the other day, you and I.
Yes.
Your 100th show, may
I add. My 100th show this year and perhaps my last.
Yes. but you did a routine that's newer for you, or parts of it are newer for you.
Yeah.
And I know that you learned a lot from that.
Yeah, I learned my hands are very shaky. And I know that there's actually like a thing you can take to make your hands less shaky. And I'm considering taking it.
Yeah, it's called practice. Oh!
But also, my hands are like legit shaky.
No,
that's why I don't do magic like that. But yeah, I did. You're right. I learned a lot about it. I learned don't drop the ring on the floor. That'd be great. There's a routine I've been doing that we added 6 elements to all at once. And I tried to do them in the show. And there were...
Complications. Yes. And also, here's something. Let me tell you.
I open strong and I close strong, so I don't care.
Let me give you a little piece of advice, all of you out there. having a magic trick screw up in front of an audience is not the end of the world. Believe it or not, they will not get mad at you.
There are also shows that are for that. You know, we talk
good on this places to be bad.
Exactly. We talk on this podcast all the time about needing a place to be bad. And we were invited to come do a very low stress show with Greg, and he was very generous to and give us some space.
I did a fairly new thing that I've only done probably about 6 or 7 times before, maybe.
And it could not have been a more forgiving audience. They thought
they were all Canadian.
They were all Canadian. They really were. It was amazing. I was so well loved. But I think that's the other thing is it's important to identify where you can work on new material. And one of the things I was really happy about is, okay, so the three of us are friends and we're not going to embarrass each other, but I could have very easily just been like, no, I'm only going to do stuff I do really well and not use this as an opportunity to work on this because I wanted to impress you and I wanted to impress you. But I know.
But you were also smart enough to have sandwiched it between two things you knew how to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is always, I mean, you hear every professional talk about this when they say, when you do something new, make sure you bookend it with something you're familiar with, you know, and that's, I mean, now having said that, I closed with the thing that I've only done a handful of times, but I've done it enough now where I was confident that if it worked, it was fine.
But you still opened with stuff you knew. So
absolutely. The whole show, all of that was stuff that is the second nature.
Yeah, and I thought it went really well.
I mean, we expected 5 people and got, you know, more than 5, so.
Yeah, it was a really fun 100th show this year to do. And also, now what am I going to do with all my time? Okay, so another kind of creativity block is somebody who basically has 2 or 3, like, go-to answers to problems. There's that thing where, you know, when all you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. We all know these magicians that basically go, I do a killer double lift, I do a great Elmsley, I have some real good, you know, whatever, false transfers, and a good pass, and that's the solution to every trick.
Right.
Or I only use Mark Dex.
Their toolbox is very limited.
Exactly. Yes. So I think there are people who are in that creative block as well, where they're really good at coming up with interesting plots, but you watch the show and you go, every trick in the show
is a thumb tip.
Is a thumb tip, or a Mark Dex, or a deck switch, you know. And I think that is a kind of creative block that people don't even know they're in.
Just not having enough knowledge, or like, for the longest time I resisted learning a top change, but I knew it was a tool I needed, so I worked on it. And it's like, I don't say you should learn every slide or every trick that's out there, or even every move with a prop, but once you know it, you can sit there and go, okay, these get the strongest reactions. This works best for this. The more you have in your Rolodex of moves and tricks and lines, the easier it is to filter out the noise and the stuff that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, and the wonderful thing about magic right now is there are all of these encyclopedia kind of style books. And a couple years ago, I sort of went through this phase where I just would read them like novels. Like, you don't have to learn every trick in Bobo's or Card College, but just like reading through the whole thing teaches you what you don't know. It was so valuable reading through Card College, but not learning every single thing, because it taught me how big a hole in my knowledge there was. Mm-hmm. So now I've cut these, like, I always think of them as whispers in my head of things I know, but I don't know I know.
Right.
So I'll be thinking of something or working on something. I'll go, hey, I wonder if you can do this. And then I'll find it's in Card College and go, oh, okay. So I didn't know that I already knew that.
Well, that's one big thing for me when I'm making stuff. Whenever I'm creating something, I'll be like, man, I need something to solve this one particular problem, like routine. Like, I have this a trick that I put out called Color Drop. And, well, excuse me, that's what they call it. That's not what I call it. I call it hypercolor, but whatever. So it came out, and I remember when I was going through the routine, I'm like, man, I need to reverse a card on the bottom without doing a half pass. And then I went, wait a second, there's a gimmick that already does that. Like, that exists. So that's one thing that I do all the time when I'm building and I'm trying to create stuff, is I go, I need something that does this. And I either know it exists, or I go, I wonder if that's a thing. Get online, look it up, and be like, well, looky there. That's a thing. That saves me time. That saves me hassle from having to make it and research it. Mm-hmm. And also, it's like, now my knowledge has expanded.
Amazing. So I really wanted to do this right now, during this time, when a lot of performers are at home.
Yes.
Taking care of their kids, maybe you'd have less time to be creative. But I think we can take this as a challenge in magic of going, okay, so everything's garbage, and none of us have shows, and it's cancel apocalypse. However, is there any kind of silver lining here? Can we use this as an opportunity to reinvent magic and to take a step back and throw away the problems of the past and step into the future? And Biz, Thank you for joining us. But we're going to do a quick lightning round as we normally do.
Oh.
Which you don't know about because you don't listen to podcasts. Okay, here's the plan.
I don't listen to any podcast, to be fair.
I am not mad at you about this.
That's
you
don't fine. And if you were, I'd be like, fine.
Great talk. Okay. We do a lightning round at the end of every episode, so you can answer as quickly as possible as the idea, or you can max maven it and take as long as you want to answer things. So question number one, Biz, what is your favorite book, like resource book in Magic for people to study?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm not going to be trite and say the ones that everybody else says. Obviously, Maximum Entertainment is the go-to for a lot of people. You've got Jeff McBride's Show Doctor. But one that I like to reference that nobody else seems to know about is Foundations by Eberhard Ries, who is a German magician director. He's like one of Topaz's. He's Topaz's director.
Wow. Topaz
and he's
great.
And he's produced a ton of award-winning magic acts in his many, many years. His book is the only one that I have really seen talk about lighting. For magicians and how to light props to just disappear on stage so they're not obvious and all stuff. So his book is very interesting to read. It's been a while since I've read it, but it's that one I would say is the one that gets skipped when people are bringing up books like this.
What about favorite book to recommend outside of magic for magician?
I don't have one.
Great.
Again, I don't read fiction, but I mean, here's the thing. There's a ton of books and there's many, I mean, there's people I know who talk about The Tipping Point and what's his name, 10,000 Hours book, whatever that is. I don't remember the name or the author, obviously. However, I will say, can I have a movie?
Absolutely.
I think a movie that is required watching as magicians is the movie Chicago. There are so many amazing visuals, and the way things are set up and performed in there is very magical in itself. And actually, there's a scene in there that influenced one of my routines that I do, and it's just, but it is the way it's done is so well structured and everything. I think all magicians should watch the movie Chicago, even if you're not into musicals. Should.
Are the people not into musicals?
Oh yeah, of course.
The coronavirus is coming from those people.
Yes.
What is your favorite cookie?
Girl Scout cookie is obviously Samoa's, as you know.
I do. Yes. They were delicious. I've never had one until I had those ones.
Oh, man. Did they have Girl Scouts in Canada?
We have Girl Guides, and they're different cookies.
Ah, well, that's fine. Well, then yes. I would say Samoa's are pretty much up there for me. I mean, can't go wrong with chocolate chip. Believe it or not, Oreos are not my favorite cookie, oddly enough. I know that's a strange thing.
Oh, it is very strange.
Yes.
And why are they at the center of all your work?
Because they're so easy to make magic out of. They're basically edible coins.
That's true. That's a very good point. And they're so consistent. Like, people expect them
everywhere,
to be consistent.
Everybody around the world has them.
Oh, that's it.
They're just different brand names.
What is your favorite tool under $50?
Me.
Great. What joke of the year? Joke. Slow clap.
Oh, do you want me to actually answer that? I will.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I will tell you that a Dremel tool is invaluable. Mm-hmm. They're not always under $50, so a glue gun, a hot glue gun is great. By the way, did you know you can get colored hot glue sticks?
I just found out about this.
Yep, red, black, brown. They have the ones with glitter in it if you really, really want to go that far. I think they have glow in the dark, which are probably not great. But they also have acrylic glue sticks.
Oh.
Wood glue sticks. There's many, many different types of glue sticks. And if you get many different types of glue sticks, make sure you get multiple glue guns because you don't want to gum up and mix your stuff.
Yeah. Good to know. Okay. So what about favorite tool between $50 and $100?
Oh, well, then I would say a Dremel tool.
Dremel tool.
If I had known this question was coming, I wouldn't have answered Dremel tool in that last one.
Well,
so.
No, you can just, you answered
yes.
glue stick.
Yes,
glue
that's
gun.
True. Glue gun, good. Yes. No, Dremel tool for sure. It is in, and here's the thing. I want to tell you this. When I say Dremel tool is a brand name, and a lot of people will be like, well, it's a rotary tool. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Go buy a craptastic rotary tool from Harbor Freight and a Dremel tool, and you tell me which one you'd rather use.
Oh,
because
yeah.
No. There are some things that you really should buy the brand name.
There was a period of time where I was touring with a Dremel tool in my chest
and they have
bag.
Cordless ones that run on batteries. They don't have as much oomph.
Yeah, they're not as good.
But they're good in a pinch.
Yeah, and also the thing I didn't realize early on about Dremel tools that I wish I had known is that there are 5 gajillion different heads.
Yes.
For 5 gajillion different jobs.
Yes, but let me tell you something. I will tell you a little thing, an attachment I found out that I will save everybody's life with these. It's a chuck. It's an adjustable chuck
yes.
goes onto the Dremel tool that lets you basically put anything that is from a like sewing needle size to all the way up to like the normal 1/8 inch thing on it. And it will change your life. So look it up.
Wow. Yeah. I'll put the link to that in the show notes.
Yes.
Okay. And then I'm going to do one more tool thing.
Okay.
Favorite tool between 100 and $1,000, which I think I know what it's going to be.
Oh, I mean, 3D printer, right?
3D printer.
I mean, or, I mean, also, I would also...
Laser cutter?
No, laser cutters are up past 1,000 for almost always, yes. Also, a vacuum form machine. I like my dental vacuum former, it's about $80 or $90, but you can also get larger ones. A vacuum form is a great tool to have because you make shells for things. You can make molds for things. And they're easy to use. You just have to buy the right plastic, which is high-impact polystyrene. Also, believe it or not, you can vacuum form craft foam.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It's not perfect, but it works.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, honey badger or tardigrade?
Oh, honey badger, mostly because of Misty Lee, because she's the honey badger of magic.
Perfect. Because of Misty Lee. I like that. Okay, great. And then one more question.
Okay.
If you could have any two animals mushed into one animal so you could keep it as a lifelong pet, what would you smush together?
Penguin cat.
A penguin cat would be your infinite companion.
Those are my two favorite animals.
Penguin cat would be freaking adorable.
Yeah.
Basically just be like a regular cat that wobbled and enjoyed the water.
Probably look a lot like Opus from Bloom County with cat ears.
I'm going to be Googling that.
I'm old and you're not.
Well, we're all the same age. In the age of coronavirus.
We'll all be the same when we're dead.
Well, thank you so much for joining
me. Thanks for finally asking me, Jesus.
I'm really glad that you didn't make a big deal about
I'm kidding. It's okay. It's okay. I'm just kidding. No, I love I mean, you know me. I could talk about this stuff for hours.
I mean, part of the reason we haven't had you on the podcast is because the last two times we've hung out when I've been doing the podcast, I've been very selfish about my time with you. And I haven't wanted to share any of it. Even this took us 3 days to do because every day I was like, well, we could do a podcast or we could go on an adventure. So I'm very selfish and I guard our time jealously.
All we ever do when we hang out is adventure.
Adventure or naps or like naps on the couch.
Right. Yeah.
That is the thing. And now it is almost 2 a.m.
Oh, it's almost lunchtime for me.
Great. It's almost bedtime for me.
Yes.
I really want to encourage everyone to use the time that we have without shows wisely.
To improve your crap.
Yeah, and improve your crap. Magic could really use a breath of fresh air. And
but don't breathe in too deeply because you don't want to get sick.
As long as that air is full of Lysol, you should be fine. Thank you so much for joining me on this very special episode of Shazam. And remember, biz is the best.
Yarp.
Shazam is sponsored in part by the Society of American Magicians. Thank you, SAM. Go join a club.